Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, and welcome to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras. I'm here with Farrah Williams and Eartha Sawiti-Pond, and I'm Beck Smith. Today we have a lot going on. Let's kick off with the UEFA Women's Champions League roundup from these last games, which was just this last week. Arsenal hosted Zurich in the Emirates, and they won 4-1. Everybody happy about that game. Juventus tied Lyon 1-1, and Real Madrid tied PSG 0-0. What are we thinking about this? Because these French teams really seem to be struggling, and that's nothing to say anything against Juventus and Real Madrid, which are teams that are definitely developing. But what a start.
Yeah, I think what it shows is that the gaps within the women's leagues across Europe over the years that have been so evident, and hence the dominance of Lyon, were obviously closing. You know, the German league is obviously a lot better now, and hence, you know, players, top players going to play out there. Same with the Spanish league, the English league. So all of the leagues now across Europe are so much more stronger. Hence, the results are a lot tighter between these top teams. The Juve Lyon one, is it a shock? Yes, a little bit. I still think that, you know, the Italian league is still a little bit behind the French league, and I would have thought that Lyon, although it was away in Italy, they would have gone there and got a result. Mm. And what I mean by result, I mean the 3 points. But they didn't. So it just shows the growth of the game across Europe now and the leagues and how developed they are. So it's great for the neutral to see, because we want the games to be more competitive. We don't want one dominant team throughout the Champions League. So, yeah, I'm excited by it. It still doesn't change my opinion of who's going to win the Champions League.
Wolfsburg, everybody,
it's
she
so
said.
So good that they're more competitive games now, because, as you say, you don't want to see the same teams every semi-final, every final. Yeah. We might still do, but hopefully
and,
not.
And just touching on that, though, do you reckon the spread of players across Europe, so as you said, like, players are going across, are they bringing that mentality to different teams across Europe? Do you think that's having an impact in terms of other teams believing they're good enough because there's that? Yeah. Change of personnel.
I think it's a really good point, because I was chatting to Juventus through this project that I'm doing with my company, which we'll get onto a little bit later. But they were saying that because they did so well last season in the Women's Champions League, so they beat Lyon in their Allianz Arena and the men's arena, didn't they, before they lost on aggregate, they could then recruit Sarah Gunnarsdottir and Bierenstein, the Dutch player that came over from Bayern Munich. And had they not done so well in the Champions League, and had the players not been able to see that, they definitely wouldn't have been able to have recruited on that level as well. So I definitely think players are moving, and it's becoming more exciting. You can go to Italy now to play professionally.
And I think, like you said, it's more like a platform in terms of advertising what your club does. Obviously, there's key teams who are dominating, but actually outside of that, it's saying, okay, we might not be winning, but look at what we're doing and look at the players that we're attracting. So, yeah, I'm excited. I think there's going to be a lot more movement. I know we always talk about the WSL and how strong it is. I think there's still going to be more players who want to get an opportunity, or getting frustrated that they're not getting a chance here, who we'll see going abroad in the next sort of year or two. So it's exciting to see the development, I guess, of the Champions League overall.
I think on that, I think as you said there, you get to a stage in your career where you've been at successful clubs that have competed on all fronts, and you get to an age and you know you want to play. And so these teams that compete in the Champions League and players that have that Champions League experience but want to play can go to the likes of Juve and get a starting you know, place. And so, yeah, I think you get to a point in your career where you want to go and move on. Hence, that's why it makes the competition more stronger. These players are going to move around, which is, as we keep mentioning, it's exciting.
I'm at that point now, so if anyone...
out there? Left back or in goal?
In goal.
Okay, cool.
Near the end of your career.
Yeah.
Also, Lyon saw another injury. We spoke about them having already 10, 11 injuries. Big name players out. Damaris Agirola, the Dutch player also got injured in that game as well. The other games that we thought were interesting were Rosengard, Barcelona 1-4, so Barcelona winning again. And Benfica, Bayern was interesting too. So Bayern won late in the game, didn't they? 2-3.
Georgia Stanway, come on. Representing the Lionesses out in Germany. 2 goals, I think, yeah. I mean, they were is it 2-0 or 2-1 down anyway? Mm. And Georgia Stanway becomes a hero. You know what? They've taken to her really well out there, and I think she's taken to the German league. If there was to be an English player that was to go out over there and play and actually settle, I would have probably said Georgia Stanway would have been the one. And she looks happy. She looks comfortable in that team, and it's really nice to see.
Yeah, I read a piece about her this week just talking about her time at City and how she felt that she sort of plateaued and needed a new challenge. And, yeah, I think... Even she talks about her mentality in the Euros, knowing that she'd already signed for Bayern before they'd even kicked off. It allowed her to just kind of be free and just play her football. Relax, so, she enjoyed it. She played some of her teammates, which she liked during the tournament as well. So, yeah, to see a young player go out and just embrace it, I think it's really nice to see. And it sets, the precedence for others who want to go out and maybe other young players who are thinking about not getting game time and looking, as I said, further afield in terms of not just here in England. Yep. So,
I could be wrong, but I'm sure she's the only outfield player from England. I know that Mary Earps went over there, goalkeeper.
And where, Bayern?
No, to actually go out and play in Germany. I could be wrong, but I'm not. Off the top of my head, I can't remember another English player that's gone and done that in a German league. And
I'll have to look that up. I actually don't know. That's a good
shout. Impressive because it's not often.
We'll come back to you next week on that one. Unless any of you guys fans out there know the answer to this, please let us know. We really want to know.
Maybe they didn't think they were good enough because Germans. That's what I'm saying, because they've been so dominant. Yeah, they're like, that's not for me. But now,
that's what I'm saying.
They're like, you need me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I'll just score the winner for you if you need it,
as she always does. Also, what was interesting was when I was chatting to the Bayern Munich team, they said that she was watching the Champions League on YouTube and was watching Bayern Munich and sort of already was clocking how they played, their style, their system that they played, and felt like it could have been good for her. So that was something that I thought was quite interesting in a development, because we weren't able to see these games from the round of 16, which we've been able to do now. And one of the things that I'm working on now with my company, Crux, is a project with YouTube. So they're looking to get some research, chatting to the teams and players and clubs, and also fans, to try to understand, okay, what's the value and impact of the YouTube channel for the world? You know, has it had an impact on women's football in Europe, but also more globally, and hearing from some of the players themselves? So we're going to put out a link, and we'd love to hear you guys, your guys' thoughts. So let us know, fill out that fan survey, let YouTube know what you guys think about it. And really, really interesting so far, the results.
I think just on that, just the growth in terms of mentality, like at that age, who was going to look to see like potential teams and seeing how they play? Did you do that, Farrah?
You couldn't.
No,
there was no access. Well, come on, did I even have a computer?
No, but
to get
I mean in terms of it, no, I was meaning in terms of like young players. Is that something in terms of we talk
as
about
a young player? I always watch. Especially international football. Mm. Yeah, I would always watch it. But only not to obviously want to go and play out there. It was always to just want to get better, see what I'm coming up against.
I'm saying in terms of being proactive, because obviously everyone wants to be technically good, tactically good, and they want to prove what they do on the pitch. But is that an extra thing where we're saying actually, even again,
I think
be
now,
ahead of the game?
I think now, it's more accessible, isn't it? So the accessibility of it obviously will allow, if players want to, the top players will obviously want that and will look. Yeah. Hence why George is where she's at.
And it's so nice to see that, because back when I was playing 100 years ago, there wasn't that access to be even able to watch the game. So when I was playing in Sweden and got approached by Wolfsburg, I was like, I have no idea what the team is like, what the league is like, and you only go off of hearsay and what people think. But they're clearly biased because they're playing in the German league. So it's so nice to be able to make your own opinions now as well.
You'd have to get the team program and just read through the list and see.
In German.
In German. 100%.
Yeah. No, but another interesting one, you know, Arsenal has Lena Hurtig. So we talked about her moving from Juventus now to Arsenal. She got her first goal, I believe, for Arsenal, and moving on to the WSL here in England. Some really big games as well we had this previous weekend. Your favorite one, Farah, you mentioned this last week, the Reading versus Leicester City. That was dramatic. That was against your old club, Reading. So
big game for both teams. I mentioned it last week. It was a the one to look out for this weekend, it being, you know, not a relegation battle so early in the season, but two teams that haven't picked up points that will probably be down there come the end of the season. The funny thing is, I was obviously working the Man United Everton game, and I was checking on that result throughout the whole game. And 89 minutes, I'm then on air, so I've logged off my phone and Reading are losing 1-0. And it wasn't probably until 45 minutes later I saw Mo Marley in the car. So Mo Marley, she was a former manager of mine, in the car park, and she said, "Ah, Reading got a late winner." And I said, "What?" So I had to get on the phone, go onto Twitter, and I saw, and obviously Rachel Rowe scoring, I think it was 90th minute and 92 minute winner. So yeah, unbelievable win for them. I heard Kelly's comments at the end of the game.
What'd she say?
The team, you know, they love making her feel as if she's close to having a heart attack. So yeah, I mean, it's a great result for them and the club.
Yeah, that's really good. And your team slash our team, we predicted them being top three slash second top three in the season. Tottenham 8-0 against Brighton.
It's been a long time.
It's
been a long time coming,
definitely.
No, I think it was a great performance in terms of Tottenham. I think just something just clicked. It was good to see goals coming from across the pitch, which was really, really nice. I'm not too sure if Brighton had an off day at the office, but I think I want to just give it down to Tottenham playing really, really well, because their goals weren't like, well, apart from Molly's goal, potentially didn't look like she
Molly
shot.
Molly who?
Molly Barchett.
No, that's a plan. That's a plan corner.
Was that a plan corner?
She took that from Reading when we were there, when I played there. When I saw it, if I wanted to ring her and say, "Molly, did you give them that corner?"
No, but some really good goals, good 3 points picked up. And yeah, I think the confidence is going to definitely be embedded, and they're going to kick on from here towards the top of the table. I don't know how far up the table they're going to be, but I think it's a good, in terms of result, a good result for them. It will breed confidence. You saw people like Jessica Naz, who had come back from a long-term injury, getting a brace. Drew Spence starting to sort of fit into the team and scoring goals from midfield. So yeah, really, really good to see that result.
Two things surprised me in that result: the amount of goals that Tottenham scored, because they're not a team that score that many goals, and the amount of goals that I hope Powell's team conceded, because again, she's a manager that, you know, prides herself on defensive organisation and you know, playing with the team that she's managing in terms of that counter-attack football. So to concede 8 goals for Brighton, hope will be very disappointed at that. But you talk about Tottenham and scoring 8, that momentum, now they go into the game at the weekend against Everton, who lost to Man United at the weekend. That, you know, if you're talking about that, Bex, that third place. So it'd be another test for them to see if they're actually serious about competing for that third Champions League spot.
And what about Man United, Everton? Because that was a big one. Everton was looking pretty good at the beginning of the season. You were at that game, Farah. Man United sitting at the top of the table now, obviously tied pretty much tied in points with Arsenal and Chelsea, but Chelsea's one game ahead with 6. I mean, Man United is looking strong.
No, they do. I mean, it's 5 clean sheets now on the bounce, 5 wins. They look strong. I think they certainly looked the team, as in, you know, you talk about development of teams, and I know we spoke about potentially Everton being there or thereabouts in that third spot. You can already see how advanced Man United are compared to them. So under Mark Skinner, now he's had a full season. You can see that. You felt that at a game there when I was there at the weekend. You felt the levels were far greater for Man United. The balance of the team was better than the Everton team. But also watching that game, it also, yes, they're sitting top of the league. Yes, they've beaten the teams I would have expected them to beat. Their biggest challenges this weekend against Chelsea. Yeah. But I still think there's a gap. You know, I was sitting there with Anita Asante and Tony Duggan and Alex Scott, and we were still saying, those are the two teams that are competing for third. Chelsea and Arsenal were still above them, still levels above them. And you could see it in the performance. Decision-making in the final third, if Man United was better in those moments, they could have really hurt Everton. But that's what top teams do, like Arsenal and Charlton. Arsenal and Chelsea. Look at me talking about Charlton. Arsenal and there. That's because Urkel was telling me about the men's 4-4 game at the weekend. But Chelsea and Arsenal, they're still, for me, levels ahead.
Yeah.
I think in terms of the personnel, for me, the growth of the personnel is really important in order to implement, I guess, what Mark wants to do tactically. I watched Nikita play and she didn't get much minutes in terms of the Euro. She's come to a new club away from Arsenal. And I think she's done really well in terms of settling in and actually letting her football do the talking, which for some players might have been a little bit difficult. Then obviously we talked about Mary Drake Earps at the back. She's just
the goalkeeper for Man United, still paying you to drop that in.
No, she's paying me in terms of performances. She's doing really, really well in that sense. But I really do think, like you mentioned, that clinical piece at the top end of the pitch is where we're going to see, I guess, the make or break stuff. And Mary, Chelsea this weekend, it's going to be difficult, yeah? So we got to make sure those gloves have, whether it's the spit, the Lucozade water, whatever you put on there, because you're going to be in demand. But I'm looking forward to seeing that game, because whether or not they win or not, it will allow us to see, like you mentioned, where is the gap? Mm-hmm. Is it real? Has it closed? I don't think there's been any real test up to now to be able to determine that. So I'm looking forward to 3 points on the weekend.
Nice. Another big weekend coming up in the WSL. So hang with us and we'll give you our thoughts after those happen next week.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, heading into our halftime team talk, this one is one that, I mean, all of our halftime team talks we think are very important.
So, yeah.
Last week was about Black History Month, but this week is about well-being, really. And there are some topics that have come onto the table that we've all seen where we felt like were quite important. The first one was Man City talking about the fact that they don't want to wear white shorts anymore, and I find it just really incredible that female players and women's football, there seems to be a role for female players in the development of the sport where it might not exist in other sports. And I find it fascinating that they can talk about a topic and not want to wear white shorts because of, you know, period spillage or all the rest. And actually, they can drive that change in the sport. I think it's really interesting. Farah, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I think you're right. I think when there's things that players feel, you know, passionately about, they're able to come together and make change with those topics or situations. I think it was West Brom we mentioned that were the first women's teams to agree that they don't wear the white shorts. I mean, I'm just thinking back to when I played, and it was something that I absolutely dreaded when it was the time of the month and you had the white shorts. I think, you know, you want to go onto the pitch with that freedom and that clear mind. And I think when you are wearing white shorts and it is that time of the month, you are going out with that extra, you know, that sitting in your head, constantly thinking about, worrying whether, you know, as you mentioned, are you going to leak? Are they going to see through your white shorts? So it's something that, you know, I think is positive change, I think, for the women's game. And women's sport in general should consider that. It's surprising it's taken this long, in my opinion. I wish, as a player, I think the only team was Liverpool that I played at. And, you know, I probably played my best football there. We had red shorts, so it was great. It never affected my mind going into games. I never had to worry at that time of the month. Otherwise,
so
I played at Everton with white shorts. Charlton, we had white shorts. Arsenal, we had white shorts. Reading, we had white shorts. England, we had white shorts. I absolutely hated it. Yeah. So, yeah, it certainly is something, you know, you talk about a clear mind in terms of performance, and whether that be sport performance or even work in general, I think the clearer your mind, the better, you know, your execution of whatever work place it is. And yeah, I'm happy to see that, you know, clubs are prepared to make that change.
Yeah, I think it's been a long time coming, because I know these conversations have been going on for a long time. It's just
me and Eva tried to change it back in 95.
95?
But it's just about who's taking the risk. It's not even really a risk in order to say this is what we need and this is the reasons why we need it, if you didn't know. And I think we've seen it, talking from a sort of Nike perspective, and we know in terms of England kit, you saw the training kit turn all black. That was kind of like a pre-step, because conversations had been had around the kits and even the sizing in terms of like coaches are not the same athletes as the players. So actually what do the size, how do they replicate in terms of that? So there's a lot of work that's going on in the background, but to see it being implemented and how that actually helps players in terms of their performance is really, really important. And I guess for me as someone who suffers from fibroids or did suffer from fibroids, and I sort of touched on it previously, like having a heavy period is something that, mate, there's no way I'm even going to the gym, let alone going to play a match. So when we're looking at this sort of elite level, how can we make sure that we're supporting players, both in terms of the physicality, in terms of the mental cycle, but also mentally, what does that do in terms of their performance? So it's good to see. I don't want it to be like a blanket thing now. Actually, I want there to still have that dialogue. And I think what's really nice about women's football is they're able to have that open dialogue. I think obviously in men's football, they always thought, I'm going to be a professional if I work, train really hard and I'll get to the top level. But now where it can actually be a career for women, I think having that consistent dialogue throughout different stages from grassroots to elite is really, really important.
It's certainly a difference in the men's game. I mean, I was playing with New Zealand always in white as well, but it was never really something that
I never thought about it.
But I had really light periods. Oh. And that's the difference, isn't it? It's like if you haven't come from that and had that experience, you're not even going to think about it. So I think what you say is exactly right, that you have to have those conversations and take everyone into consideration because everyone's so different. And my head would fall off every game, seriously. That sounds horrific.
Honestly, like warm up changing, coming from the warm up 30 minutes later, I'm like just making sure
Puma's,
and I've seen players though, Bex, that have like actually like, you know, come through in white shorts.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm talking about times where there's no extra shorts either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even like, especially with women's game, you never had like two sets of kit. Now they do.
Mm.
I know when I was at Red, it was two, but I'm on about in the early days of it when it was happening.
And it's more broadcast, kits. Isn't it? Yeah. Now we're on TV, we're all over. There's highlights, so you can't really escape that.
Your teammates, the national team teammates, never spoke about it?
Genuinely, probably. I was not aware of it. And
you never had conversations. Like I would have conversations every day, like even at club or whatever. I'm like. Yeah. Girls, like, it's like, yeah.
Mate, we were just trying to focus on winning. Yeah. Can you guys just, like, actually train properly? Yeah.
That's good, though. Like, what I'm saying, because as I say, you talk about distractions. It was a big distraction.
Yeah.
I guess for me, like, I saw it earlier on, because obviously I work in schools. So in terms of girls have PE, like, every single week. So, again, just making sure that they're secure and they know how to manage it and there's other resources. But it's the same sort of thing. Like, it's embarrassing if they're in a GCSE PE lesson and there's boys with you.
Man.
Exactly. Sometimes that's the reason why they don't pick a subject, purely because if something like that, their sort of self-esteem is, they're just not willing to take that risk. Because
imagine that young child for the first time. Exactly. Oh God, and they're like, oh, you're the kid. Of you.
And I guess for me, I kind of look at it in terms of, you talk about periods and you never thought about it because you've never had a heavy period. Yeah. The same in terms of sports bras. Like, people think, oh, they don't have big boobs, so they don't even need one. It's so funny because I was talking to, when I had done a recent event with a Nike bra expert, and I was talking about the current Phenom bra, and they was like, oh, we never thought it would, like, we thought, oh, you just have big boobs and this does the job. And I was like, nah, what about this movement? What about that? And I was like, unless you've got them, you would never really know that, yes, you need an extra
trust
bra.
Trust me, Bex, when would never let really me, bandages, trust me, like, growing up with bra. Urfa, honestly, we used to strap her shoulders for her bra to sit on. We'd strap round her boobs. We'd, like, she'd put a bra, we'd strap around it. Right, so you just got to picture this now. And then she'd put the next sports bra on top. And then she would have shoulder pads. So, like, because obviously it weighed heavy.
And the same, and like, changes, after, it's the same like changing with in terms of your menstrual cycle. Like, at half time, had to do that whole process again because I'd played a game and I'd been moving and it's the bandages dropped. And
that sounds horrible.
Yeah. But it
sounds miserable. No, but it's great that you're doing that work. And I was going to say earlier that Puma's doing some nice work on period panties as well, right? Amazing, so you can wear different underwear.
I wish they had that in my day, man. I'm coming out of retirement.
Do you trust it? I've never had it. I've seen it, but apparently it works. But I'm a bit kind of, not, I haven't got OCD, but I'm just in terms of like,
you do have OCD.
I'm like, how, like, I can't see the the mechanics of the pants and still wearing them. I just feel a bit like...
I'm going to get Puma to send some out to us. Maybe we need some. Maybe we should all try them.
I'm stressing already now. I'm getting anxiety. Let's move on.
All right, moving on then to get you out of your anxiety. So another interesting topic that you brought up, Farah, was we saw that Hannah Hampton is no longer with the Lionesses due to, quote, attitude issues, and it's unlikely she'll play again under Serena Wiegman. This was... really interesting, and you think about the mental aspects of playing, and I mean, when you get to the top, it's for me it was 95% at that level, sure. Because everyone's training equally hard, maybe a little bit harder than the other. Your skill set is pretty equal, you know, some are obviously a lot better than others, but really it's the mental side of the game that gets you that top 5%, doesn't it? And looking at a player like Hannah Hampton, clearly has the skill to play with the Lionesses because she was with the squad. She's the goalkeeper for the Lionesses during the Women's Euros, if you didn't know that. But what's going on there? What?
If only we knew. But I think you're right. I think in terms of your mental strength at the elite level, that separates you from the rest of the pack. She's undoubtedly one of the... one of the best keepers out there in the WSL, certainly with the ball at her feet and in the modern day game, which is, you know, what keepers are probably judged on nowadays. But it's interesting, as you said, the quote says about attitude, and there's so many players that I've played with along over the years and also coached over the years where managers and teammates would see them as, you know, problem child within the squad, and obviously we never had the resources around at the time to know or to go into depth into as to why their attitude is the way it is, why they behave the way that they do.
For support,
we now do. So, you know, is it something, you know, further, you know, that we need to tap into other than just going, she has a bad attitude? You know, I've definitely heard that through the grapevine, but through people, I've heard that, you know, her attitude at times isn't great. You can clearly see when she plays, there's something that's not, you know, she switches off, you know, in game, you know, her attention span isn't great. You see that in games with her. And I've always spoke about that when I've done commentary on Aston Villa, that, you know, there's moments in games where she's just not switched on. She doesn't focus for long periods of time. So that's something that we, you know, whether it be the FA, whether it be Aston Villa, they need to look into. Is it, you know, could it be a ADHD, for example? Could it be Asperger? Could it be anything on the spectrum? Erfa, you'll know more about those type of illnesses, yeah, mental illnesses. Kids, but I'm saying, could it be something like that actually, you know, is giving her this, what people are perceiving as a bad attitude or behaviour issues?
Yeah, but I guess for me, the question is, what's the definition of attitude? And what's the definition of a bad attitude? Because I know in terms of myself personally, I've been labelled with a bad attitude.
So you do.
In terms of...
but that's no, but kind of true.
No,
right?
No, no.
You get me in trouble all of the time.
Not at all. I guess for me,
I was problem child. I used to get told the same. I had a bad attitude.
Yeah, but again, but what is... It comes down to the culture and the spaces. So in terms of understanding, like, what is it? We're just seeing the top end. For me, there's always, like, two other steps before that. So this is what we're seeing. Yeah, this is the outcome. What's causing that outcome? And then what's the thing before that that's causing this reaction in terms of the outcome? So for me, there has to be more done in terms of trying to find out what's the reason why they're displaying this. And if it is, actually, it's just because they're displaying it and they've got all the support and there's stuff in place and there's interventions, then that's just it. And we work around actually how can they sort of manage that. But to just say, okay, that they're ruled out, yes, I know there wants to be a specific sort of culture within the squad and they don't want to disrupt that. But actually, are we just saying there's an issue with this person and we're forgetting about them completely?
Do you believe that statement that Serena, she's not going to play under Serena?
I can't see that being real.
Like, what I'm saying, the quote's there. Don't get me wrong. We've seen the quote's out there. Yeah. You know, it's believed that she's not going to be picked or selected again under Serena Wiegman. I don't see that. I don't
because
see how you allow
good.
A player. I think she's very talented.
Just
I just don't
reform.
Think to
like,
be. I just think, yeah.
Even if she's,
I mean, she's not playing
wrong.
At club, so something's happening, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if she's injured, but she's not playing at club currently. She hasn't played since September.
Miller, right.
So, you know, something's obviously not quite right at the minute. But I just don't think. One, do I think Serena's that person that wouldn't give players second chances? I don't think she is that manager. I think she's somebody that will be open to that.
But
if you're a player that, if it is an issue, that you're prepared to, you know, make those changes that are needed in order to be within. the environment that you know that Serena's trying to create. I don't see Serena as a manager that would be that way. I mean, I could be wrong.
But how bad is that to just rule someone out?
Yeah,
if that's what I mean.
There's no other place in society where you just get completely ruled out. You go to prison, for example, you get...
go to America.
there's always another option, but there's always something else. You go to prison, there's reform, they say you come out, you're a better person. You can't say something's happened with... potentially in terms of the England setup, and that's it. You can never play because you could be. What if you're really talented? Mm. You're just saying because something went wrong, or something happened.
That's what I mean. I don't think that
like going forward,
but,
you're never going to be involved.
But let's
is
put it
from,
out there.
Is this from Hannah Hampton's mouth? Because I've seen the Guardian have done an interview, right? So they've done an article.
Yeah.
Are they doing it based on what I'm saying? Something that Serena said, or something that Hannah Hampton said?
It'd be interesting to see what Hannah's reaction is because I haven't seen it anywhere. But maybe it is out there. But yeah. I think that's interesting. But I'm just putting it out there. I don't know what's happened in the past. But what if they have gone through all of the, you know, trying to support, trying to get some mental help, trying to do some testing, and what if actually it's just a bad egg and rotten on the team? And the reason why I ask that, I'm just talking about generally, so even Hannah Hampton aside, you know, I think this is a topic that is really difficult for coaches because you, and especially in the women's game, and especially in some areas of the women's game, like New Zealand, let's say, is a very small talent pool, right? Mm-hmm. So you may have someone that is really tremendously talented, but if they're a bad egg and they just like sort of rot the culture, do you take that decision as a manager to remove them from the environment so that you can work as a team? Because we know football doesn't work when you're not in a team. Or do you keep them on the team and let them, you know, permeate their negativity throughout the culture? And you're a teacher.
You find a way. You can't just rule them out. And I give an example. It comes like if I give school, for example, it's like saying, do you exclude a child from the school and then pass the problem on to somebody else? Actually, there's someone who this is a talent. This could actually be a lifeline in terms of where this young person goes to. Do we just rule them out because actually the environment or the foundations or something's wrong, because they're talented enough, they've got the talent, it's about how do they bridge that gap to do the thing that they want to do? And are we saying like everybody else that actually no, that's it, we're just gonna push them to the side because they're not fitting our culture? And this is the piece that I'm saying in terms of resources. Yes, we want to have that elite set up, yes, we want to perform well, but for those players who are good enough but just can't get there, there has to be some sort of investment in terms of resources to help them bridge that gap.
What if there has been already?
Then there needs to be more. It's not just one way.
Just keep trying until
it's not just about just keep trying, because they're obviously talented enough. They've dedicated time to be able to access that space. So I guess for us as a game, what does it say to other players who want to aspire if you're not the fully fledged perfect thing, or we can't tap into what it is that you need, that you can't be in this space? So for me, it's about, yes, this is where we aspire. This is what we want the top set of players to be like. But it's about looking at what are your resources, what's good, what's not working well, and how do we allow you to access this space?
You know, it's quite. I agree. I'm somebody. I mean, when I coach, I always, you know, people always say, "Oh, it's a bad egg," or you know, this player's disruptive. You've got to find ways of managing and coaching different characters, and you know, some managers will be more patient than others in doing that and trying to fulfill that player's potential. And it's evident. Hannah Hampton has huge potential to be, you know, England's number one if she wanted to be. There's clearly something that's not right there, whether that be people haven't got the patience with her or she's not ready to make those changes and adjustments needed to be in that environment. But it is a two-way thing. You're right, Earth. You can, you know, resources after resources after resources. And if the player's not buying into it, at some point you have to go, okay, well, I've tried everything. There has to be a two-way thing, Earth. You can't
I get it.
I would never give up on a player.
Yeah.
I don't agree with giving up on people and players. And I also don't know if it's because I don't even see her as somebody that's quite loud. So I don't even, I mean, I don't know the girl well enough to really talk about her, but she doesn't strike me as somebody that can disrupt everybody within a group in terms of being a loud character. She doesn't seem like that person. Maybe she is.
In terms of resources, though, what type of resources are we talking about? Because sometimes we can always just go back to the same resources, the status quo resources.
You have to go to the deepest roots of it, Earth. What I'm saying, the deepest roots is probably, you got to go to childhood and something that's probably...
But who? Sometimes it's not just about going to those spaces, it's about who's going to those spaces. And is it culturally appropriate? And is it the right people to go for those conversations? So it's not just about, for example, me going to, I don't know, a white middle class school and talking about stuff that, yes, I have the qualifications and yes, I can access it, but they might not engage with me. They might not relate to me. So it's about all those things. Are they taking the time to get something that works specifically for her, or they say, nope, this is what everyone's got. If you can't manage it in this way, then we're not doing anything different. And this is the piece I'm talking about. Sometimes it's not just about saying about the equality, it's the equity piece in terms of what does that young person need, or what does that individual need personally to make that next step forward.
I think that's a really interesting point, that equality versus equity. You know, we talk about that when we look at different types of resources. Equality means everybody gets the same. Equity means everybody gets what they need according to their own capabilities, needs. It's certainly an interesting one. I've also been on teams, though, where I felt like the coach and there has been so much support for players, and they just refuse to be a team player. And at some point, you know, as a leader on the team, there has to be a decision, because if you're constantly dragging down the culture, it's like, you go get some resources, then we'll try to help you. But if you want to play on this team, this is the culture.
And I think that can be correct. I agree. Because you can have somebody that can drain the energy out of a group of players. And especially when you're in camp. We're talking more international, but I mean, day-to-day at club is a little bit different. But on a camp where you're away for tournament, for example, and you've got somebody draining the energy out of the group of players, it's difficult. I would agree it's difficult. But you're right. The work probably, in order for her to come back into the squad, if that's what it's to be, would need to be done away from camp. Ongoing when she's in camp. I think the initial part has to be, how can we work with this individual outside of camp with her club, whether it be parents, whoever she's close with or lives with or whatever, that can also help her, guide her, has to be done outside of the international environment for now.
Yeah.
And it's a process. You've got to start somewhere. She definitely needs that support.
Good. I guess one last thing on that, and hopefully we can link into the next bit, just in terms of she's playing for club week in, week out before the Euros. She goes away and she plays no football. So in terms of her confidence, she feels she's doing everything right. She wants to play and she's not being able to access that. Like, in terms of the mentality around that, how is she...
Sounds like Ronaldo.
How is she... Exactly. How is she managing it?
Give her another chance.
That's what she does.
She needs to be fine. Yeah. In terms of how is she managing that? What does that look like? Because obviously it might have now transferred into club football, because now she's not playing for a club. So is that another thing in terms of managing that expectations? Because maybe it's something that has never happened to her before. She's always played. It's always been a certain way. How does she deal with that? How does she manage that?
And that certainly does happen when you're a big fish in a small pond and then go into a national team environment. Just moving forward into looking at the NWSL, because we had a big week, actually. They also had their final. So Portland Thorns beat Kansas City 2-0 to win their third NWSL championship. It was in front of over 17,000 people in Audi Field in Washington, D.C. And they're just doing really well out there, but still linked to what we're talking about, the mental health. These players have been dealing with the investigations that have been going on for months now. So U.S. Soccer put out the feelers to go and interview these players. So they have literally been dealing with the fact that they have had sexual abuse cases that they've been dealing with. And only 3 weeks before this final, as we talked about on one of our first podcasts, the Yates report was dropped. And if you look back at the history of the Portland Thorns, Paul Riley, one of the coaches that was fired after reports of sexual coercion and abuse, was actually the Portland Thorns coach for 2014-2015. So some of these players have played under him. So what I thought was fantastic over the weekend was just seeing the scenes of them actually in celebrating and exciting and having some fun, where, you know, you wonder the mental drain that they've been under for and duress for so long.
Yeah, I think it was a good win. And we'll talk about Thorns as well. But I thought also just linking the Kansas City goalkeeper, who also, again, hadn't played for a long period of time in terms of that sort of mental well-being. And then to see her in the final made some amazing saves, I think kept them in it for quite a long period of it.
Adriana French, Kansas City current goalkeeper. And yeah, unbelievable player.
I think in terms of the NWSL, I think it's the beginning of something new, I think, in terms of accountability, and a lot more dialogue is going to be happening, not just within individual teams, but I think across the league, which is really, really important. And I think that celebration piece it was really, really important as well, not just for the clubs in terms of the final. I also saw the end of season like awards thing. I wanted to be there. Yeah. I've been to a few FA ones, but that one, like their red carpet, and I wanted to be in that room. So I think it's really important to not let it overshadow the great work that's happened across the league. the individual performances, the MVPs, the coaches of the year, like all that sort of stuff. We still need to remember, actually, it's been a really great, successful season in terms of on the field.
Yep.
And it's just about catching up off the field in terms of the sort of governance side of things.
I think it did actually feel and look like, not just from the Fawns, but it looked like a celebration. It looked like a, you know, like everything, the weight has just dropped off everybody, the whole league and the players, the staff that have all been involved, that have had this case, you know, ongoing for so long, that it was just a big heavy weight dropped off of all of their shoulders, and they just celebrated. And it was just that freedom, you know, from the findings that they had. It was just like, look, we're going to, that's now gone. Let's celebrate, you know, the success, not just of the league and winning, but the success of the findings.
Yeah.
And look forward to, you know, a new season, and, you know, where as Eartha mentions there, everything, you know, the scope is now on them, right? Mm-hmm. They can't hide, they can't run away from the issues that have been there. They've been highlighted, they've been found, and they have that freedom now to go and play. And they look like the final, you know, the players played with that freedom. And as we spoke about before, when you're playing, you know, we talk about in the well-being a period or something that is just on your mind, and your mind is not clear, you can't perform. And we've seen that these players are now able to just perform with that freedom.
Yeah, and you wonder, like, is that one of the reasons why Sophia Smith, who I think for me is probably one of my favorite players, she was the number one draft pick in the 2020 NWSL draft, which is a whole nother topic that we should go into, the draft versus how we do things here. But she was the league MVP and chosen as the game MVP, and she's the youngest player to score in an NWSL final. She's only 22 years old, and we saw her against the Lionesses here in Wembley only a few weeks ago back in October, and she still was standing out even though US lost that game. You know, is it easier when you're younger as well to not have as much weight on your shoulders? And, you know, we did see some of the criticism saying that she might not have, should have been picked for the MVP of the season. You mentioned that earlier with, I think you said it was it Carly Lloyd Carly that had said it, that, you know, and then she went out and...
Carly Lloyd said that, no, it was actually applauding the fact that she got MVP and said, you know, shutting down the haters pretty much to say that, like, look, there she is, MVP, and this is why, because she scores in finals.
Yeah, and she did.
And she did, yeah. So, yeah, Carly Lloyd really supportive of it. I think certainly when you're younger, you know, as a player, you don't have all those worries that you start to get as you get older and understand life a little bit, you know. And
that's so, why I quit, to be honest. So for it sure, was just yeah. too much I know. Going that's on why in my
I,
head.
Yeah, I didn't grow up until I was 37, so
I'm still growing up.
I was going to say still, maybe. Yeah.
But I think when you're young, you do play with freedom. You have that, you know, everyone talks about being fearless, and the young players are fearless because they don't have the same sort of worries that a mature adult would have. And so, yeah, she probably plays without, you know, any fear. And it's exciting. She's a fantastic player, and, you know, I'm sure she'll be one in the World Cup that everybody will be talking about. But, yeah, it is different. The older you are, the more... You know, you overthink about certain things.
Where does that come from, though?
Tell me. I don't know. Money worries, paying mortgages, paying car. You tell me. You've not got those worries.
No, but before the elite level, I mean, like, because obviously, like, bringing it back, obviously, the WSL has not been going for super long. But before that, like, where does that worry come from as you get older? Because, like, for me, it's just about playing football and enjoying it. And Farah's looking at me and she's smiling. I remember going away with England way back, and literally I'll never forget it, like, just in terms of playing and going in different positions, they put me up front and I thought I was still playing, like, on the corner. Like, I was doing all the things that you do, like,
on the
street.
She's going to tell you about all the skills that she was doing,
because,
right?
I was playing without Bex, fear, because, like, in those positions, when you're playing in your normal case, these are the things that you do. You just play with freedom, and you try and
can
play.
Can I add into that? Let me just interrupt you, Eartha, because she's talking about, right, and don't get me wrong, she was playing in an 11v11 game up front, like she was in a cage, right? But also, she's not going to tell you this, but this is what she was doing. She was stood up front with her thumb in her mouth, on her, you know, the second index finger here, twisting her ear.
This
right?
is in
whilst
England
playing England under 17. No. Yeah. Are you saying no?
No. So think about it.
Was she or was she not? She thought she was in the cage chilling.
Literally. Can I just?
Yes. Thank you. Can I put my back to you, Eartha. Okay,
so my two favorite positions are goalkeeper and in defence.
Yeah,
so
left back.
What am I doing up front? I'm just like, there's people being injured. They've taken me off. They just thought, oh, put her up front. She's strong. She can hold the ball up. She's not. We're not really looking at her.
Yeah. So therefore, the thumb goes in the mouth.
So I'm just like, okay, ball comes to me. I'm just playing, just normal street football.
No fear.
Just playing football. Like, that's how I. And I think in terms of when we look at the younger players now, coming back to why we're talking about it, actually, they just enjoy playing.
Yeah.
And I guess it's that added pressure where, I don't know, I'm saying, where does it come from? Who embeds that into the younger players? Say, oh, now you've got to be more responsible, or now you've got to be a leader. And so actually it's stopping you just playing your
I think it's coaches, isn't it?
It's definitely coaches as you get older
will make, as you say, you as a leader, you as a captain, so they put all those responsibilities. As a kid, you don't really, even if you're captain, you wear the armband, it doesn't mean anything. It does to you,
you
the player.
See me with that,
yeah, I know, but in terms of the responsibility that a coach gives you at that age, there is none. So you're the captain, great, probably because you're the best player, so they give you an armband. Mm. As you start to get older and become a captain of a senior team, there's responsibilities that come with that. You then have to be the link between the players and the players' problems and the coach, for example. And Bex, you can elaborate on that as
I totally agree. And I think part of, like, when I came in as captain at 21, so I was super young, and these women had been on the team for so many years, and I was brand new to the squad. So it was, for me, it felt like quite a lot of responsibility also for in a national team where, you know, my accent was not a Kiwi accent either. But I think my coach put quite a lot of pressure on me as a young captain and as a young player to set a culture. And do I agree with that now looking back? Not necessarily. I think you have to allow players a space to be able to stick your thumb in your mouth and play like you're in the cage, right? Like, because you, if you're not playing your best and not playing authentic to you and living how you want to live and being the person you want to live, then you're not really setting any standard for anyone else either. So
it's interesting though you say that, because I think back to when I was at England under Hope, and it was a period where Faye White was out injured.
Mm, who was your captain at the
and
time?
I was put as captain. Yeah. And we go then to tournaments 2 years later, and Hope gives the armband back to Faye, and her thing to me was, you don't need the armband to perform.
Yeah.
So there are people out there that need responsibilities in order to give them a focus, in order to get the very best out of them. There's also people out there,
absolutely,
probably like me, that just need the freedom to play and not have to worry about anything other than, you know, doing your job.
Mm. I think leadership's an interesting topic. Yeah. Maybe we should do an actual like halftime team talk about that, because I find it really, really fascinating.
We'll get a good leader in, because you haven't got any in here.
Yeah. That's good. Very true.
Just coming back in from the toilet. What was you just talking about?
All right, so that's it for our halftime team talk on well-being of players. And looking ahead, let's check out some of the other leagues around the world. But, you know, I just wanted to mention from the NWSL, Adriana French is the goalkeeper for Kansas City, and she was unbelievable. And going back to the topic we had last week, which if you haven't listened to it, was very, very good. It was the Black History Month. It was a long one, but it was a good one. And she said that her favorite goalkeeper was the U.S. Women's National Team goalkeeper, Brianna Scurry. So my one that I mentioned last week.
Say me too. Then. I was about to say, wow, she knows me.
But it's that, you know, she had a role model. She followed her. She was able to. And how she's playing right now, they're calling her the next Bryce Scurry. So that's really, really cool. But another thing I thought was really cool was seeing Crystal Dunn. I don't know if you guys know, but 156 days after she gave birth, she had a goal in the semifinal, really late goal, to get them into Portland Thorns into the final. And just seeing her come on the 73rd minute into the final with a humongous roar, and then seeing her go over and like take her tiny little child after the game. I just love this about the U.S. Women's National Team and the culture that's been set for so many years. And also Adriana French has two kids as well. And I love it. You don't see it as much in other countries. And I think it's because the support's not there. But I just love seeing mothers playing football.
Yeah, it's really nice to see. It's not something that I guess we see a lot or have seen in England a lot. And actually the other day when we was at the BFP event, I was speaking to Mary Phillips and Leanne Sonson, and they were saying to Mary, remember when you used to bring your boys down to training and during pre-season, and they used to be kicking things and knocking things down, and Vic used to be like, Mary, come on, look, the boys are doing stuff. And it's like now actually they can build their schedules around players, but actually, like I said, there wasn't that facility before. You'd have to drag them along, sit in a pram, or even I guess be with other players. And I remember even when we was at Charlton, some of the like directors' kids and the managers' kids, like we see them now and they're all big, and they're like, remember when you used to me and Farrah used to make them like kind of do something. We was always babysitting the youngest
go
kids.
Go get those balls. Yeah.
We were as close in terms of age as those, I guess, those young kids that were coming to the game. So, really nice to see.
No, America's always been ahead of the game in terms of that and their support systems for their players. I mean, I remember many of times of playing the US national team, and you know, they've got all their kids, the players that had kids, mm-hmm. and the nannies that are there looking after them whilst the players can, you know, do what they're there to do and train and focus and whatever. We're still so far behind. It's a subject that we are going to talk about on the podcast further down the line around the support here in the WSL. There's still a lot of work to be done. Yep. I was at the weekend with Tony Duggan, who's currently pregnant, and she still feels that she has support from Everton as a club. She mentions that, but in terms of knowing what training they should be doing whilst they're pregnant, what can they do? There's so much that needs to be spoken about, addressed. Every club within the WSL are working differently on that topic in particular. And yeah, it's not in a great place. It's obviously there's something in place that the PFA have put, or I think it was UEFA maybe, that put in place. There has to be something FIFA, there in place. Yeah, FIFA was it? So cover. Somebody has put something in place, it's different for every club. So it's not, absolutely. It doesn't have to be the same. So there's a whole podcast absolutely. We're going to talk about yes. and get some mums on the show. Yes. So yeah, that'll yes, be further
let's
down
do
the line.
That. Let's get, I remember
but it was great to see them, as you mentioned, them. Yeah. Crystal Dunn, especially, she played here for Chelsea, and it's great. Yes. And she always plays that big smile, doesn't she? So
she's
to get
so good.
Fantastic player.
Remember when Chapman got pregnant and she had like three kids? Yeah. Everyone was like,
yeah, I do remember, because we were like fuming as players, like, because we didn't make the World Cup because we needed Chapman.
Yeah, and she got pregnant.
What are you doing coming to support us with your belly out there? Get on the pitch.
No, it's neat. And she did come back and play, didn't she? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we could continue on that. We will continue on that topic. Let us know what you guys think about it. And the final thing that happened this last week was the Copa Libertadores Femenina, which is CONMEBOL, South America's 14th edition of their club competition. So it's basically the equivalent of the UEFA Women's Champions League. The club competition in South America had the final in Ecuador from the 13th to the 28th of October, and Palmeiras from Brazil defeated Boca Juniors from Argentina 4-1 to win their very first title. What are we thinking? We like the Brazilians, don't we? We like the vibe, we like the dancing.
Yeah, it's great. I guess in terms of, for me, I think a lot of their national team most probably play outside of their sort of domestic league, but it's also good to shine a light on those players who are trying to break through and just demonstrating again that the football within their country and the stuff that's coming from grassroots is really, really good. So always good to see, I guess, and to shine a light on other football, especially Argentina. I went across there a couple of years ago. Mm. Atletico was another big club over there who are doing some great work. So yeah. Hopefully some of those players might be coming across the pond sometime soon. Yeah.
I did see the celebrations. I did see on Twitter. And I did be that geek that clicks on, you know, the team and then click on some of the players. And actually there are quite a few current national team players that actually play out in Brazil. So it's actually cool that they still have some of their own playing in there and trying to drive their own league back in Brazil. So yeah, that was good that I geekily clicked through just to see if there was any Brazilian national team players in there.
Well done. And there's some really good ones. And Pia Sundhage, remember, the Swedish coach, but she's used to coach the US women's national team, then Sweden, has gone out, and now she's coaching the Brazilian women's national team. So she's had a serious run of success with both of her previous national teams. So it'll be interesting to see how Brazil do in the World Cup as well. But it's nice to see Argentina also in there, because they're so strong on the men's, and on the women they just don't put the resources in. So it's nice to see an Argentinian team in there as well. All right, well, I think that wraps us up for this week, but we've got a preview of next week. Farah, what's going on this weekend? Any games that we should be watching?
Yeah, the big one we mentioned earlier in the pod, Man United against Chelsea. I think Man United are at home, so Chelsea have to travel away. I think that's a big game at the weekend.
Yep, nice. What do you got going on this week?
Just speaking of Chelsea, just a quick congratulations to Karen Carney, Eniola Luco,
yes,
and Katie Chapman for their Hall of Fame induction. Nice. So well done. Well done, ladies. Well done, ladies.
And three that appreciate, three that are deserving of it, not appreciate it. They're obviously appreciative.
I was going to say the previous three. No, about to say
the three that they deserve it for what they've done for the game.
100%.
Yeah, so,
I think there's a Williams up there on the list somewhere coming as well, potentially. Or third, do you think?
Williams?
Yeah, maybe a Williams. She's
First one in.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for us with Boots, Balls, and Bras for this week. Tune in next week. And always, as always, send us your feedback. Send us what you guys want us to talk about. And we appreciate you listening. See you next week. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.